My guest, jazz pianist and songwriter Jeremy Siskind, recently joined the faculty at Western Michigan University, teaching jazz piano as well as a class in songwriting, as we'll hear. Originally from California, he studied in New York, which is where he met Fred Hirsch. There's a strong connection between Fred Hirsch and Jeremy Siskind. Here's Mr. Siskind.
I consider Fred my primary mentor. I've been studying with him since about 2005, and he's really changed my outlook on piano and, of course, you know, as a true mentor does on life. I'd encountered his music long before I studied with him, and I was a huge fan, and I was kind of actually amazed when I was a sophomore in college, and I sent him an email about an exercise I heard he did, and he said, come down to New York and have a lesson. And he's actually one of the reasons that I'm here at Western Michigan University. He personally recommended me for this position. So we do have a very close relationship, and I am, you know, I'm so thrilled that he's going to be here and, you know, be able to share his just unparalleled wealth of knowledge with our students and, of course, his unparalleled performances with you, hopefully.
It's a trio?
Yes, it's a trio with John A. Bear on bass and Eric McPherson on drums.
Fred was a prodigy. He appeared on television shows. He was he wrote the music for his middle school musical and a bunch of amazing things early on. He sort of started changing the face of jazz behind the scenes from sort of a let's try to preserve jazz to a let's open it up to new streams. Can you continue that story or that thread on how he influenced music?
Absolutely. I think his most profound influence is synthesizing elements of classical music and jazz in ways that haven't really been done to that extent before. You mentioned that he was kind of a musical prodigy. It wasn't really in the jazz idiom, though. He came to that kind of relatively late in life, in his high school years. But he was a fantastic classical musician. He was very interested in song, and you can really hear this in a lot of his music, particularly in his solo piano playing. He starts using textures that nobody's ever used before. He starts incorporating things from his favorite classical composers. He uses the harmonic language of Chopin in all these interesting inversions. And in terms of just playing the instrument, certainly we've had virtuosos in jazz, you know, the likes of Art Tatum and Oscar Peterson. But I don't think we've ever had anybody who has the tonal expertise and the tonal in terms of the actual timbre of the instrument that Fred Hirsch has. The variety and the beauty that he gets out of the piano were something that really kind of changed the face of how a lot of us think about jazz piano.
That's new to me. Can you? Well, maybe we should just take a break. You brought along a track called Aria. And I think that the title sums up what you were talking about. It's a classical term.
Certainly. And as you listen to this, you can really listen to the texture, which this piece was based off of some music of one of Fred's favorite composers, Egberto Gismonti, who's a great Brazilian composer. And so you'll hear that there's bass on the bottom, a singing melody on the top, and then these kind of offbeat chords in the middle that create this amazing rhythmic energy. And even in the improvisation, he's able to sustain and elaborate upon this texture. So I think here's Aria.
If you just tuned in, that's Fred Hirsch at the piano and a tune called Aria. And here at WMUK, Jeremy Siskind, professor of jazz piano at Western Michigan University and former student of Fred Hirsch. Is he one of those can't-miss artists for you?
Absolutely. I've probably heard him play well over 30 times. I can think of, 10 to 15 times at the Village Vanguard, my favorite club in New York, this great underground thing that, everybody from Bill Evans to John Coltrane has played there.
I've never been there, but I keep I see the record covers where they made the great albums at the Village Vanguard.
Yeah, Fred does about two stints a year there. Generally, at the Vanguard, they have week-long stints where they'll have the same artist, the same group for a week, which is really great because they get to keep on playing two sets, three sets a night for a whole week, which is a rare thing these days.
You can see something magical develop over the course of that time.
And I have. I very much have. I've seen him play solo, duo, trio. I go every single chance I get, and I highly recommend it.
So it's like bringing New York to Kalamazoo. You did mention the other two musicians that he's bringing with him, also New Yorkers, and maybe a little on their background if you know it.
Yeah, I can give a little bit. One of the unique things about Fred is that he plays music that, is pretty accessible, and he really likes working with musicians who kind of come from a more avant-garde scene, what we call in New York maybe the downtown scene. So John A. Bear, the bass player, is an amazing player, highly in demand, more in that kind of downtown scene. And Eric McPherson is the most recent addition to the trio. He replaced Nasheet Waitz, who had been the drummer. It's kind of funny because I guess Eric and Nasheet are kind of best friends, drummers in New York. So it's interesting that they traded off gigs. But they've been working together as a trio very consistently for, my estimate would be, about 5 years. And they really have a big repertoire and have a huge rapport going on. So there's good reason to come and see both of those guys as well.
When you say wide repertoire, what are some of the genres and ages, eras they're grabbing from?
So Fred is a well-loved and esteemed composer. Certainly that song that we just heard was one of his tunes. And they do a lot of original compositions. Fred usually includes works by Thelonious Monk in his trio sets. And he's also an expert on the Great American Songbook. A lot of Cole Porter, you'll hear some Gershwin, those kinds of composers as well.
Being a great musician is also doing a bit of context, research, writing, understanding the gestalt of the era in which music was created. I wondered if you might expand that to a general thought on, as a musician, not getting completely tied down by the tiny little small world of your one song, but bringing in other outside influences, literature, for example?
Sure. And I think in the context of Fred, one of the things that I enjoy about his original compositions is that it seems like they're all about something. And he seems to always take an idea, he's really interested in dance. I know he's dedicated songs to ballerinas. He'll often bring in something from the classical music world. I can think of a beautiful piece he's dedicated to Robert Schumann. So often there will be some kind of a jumping off point. We're going to listen to a song later called Stuttering, which is, very much based on a concept. It's a very conceptual piece about the concept of stuttering. So it's always good as an audience member to have something that your brain can tie onto and that can spark your imagination to think, oh, this is what I can imagine while I'm listening to the music.
Oh, fantastic. When you were taking lessons from Fred, how would he introduce a new tune to you?
Well, it's very important to him, especially if we're working on something from the Great American Songbook, that the lyrics are first and are in the forefront. It's very important that he knows that we know the lyrics. He's really very interested in the art of song, and he'll throw out terms like question song. He says a song like Skylark is a question song because it begins with this question. Skylark, have you anything to say to me? I was playing something and he called it a catalog song because it was essentially a list of these things. And so he's very interested in pinpointing what exactly these songs are trying to do lyrically, what they're about. He's very interested in what the climax of a song is, which is something that we don't always necessarily think about as jazz musicians, because so many people think about, oh, I just want to get right to the improvising. I want to get to, you know, all that stuff I've been practicing. But he says, no, if we're going to play a song, we need to really know that song inside and out. Why are we playing the song? What kind of emotion are we trying to express? One of the things that I know that he does for his solo concerts sometimes is he'll write on the left side of the sheet the songs that he wants to play, and on the right side of the sheet, adjectives that might describe a performance. Bouncy, forceful, quick. And he'll sometimes mix and match the songs and the adjectives so that he has a really clear mental image of what he wants to portray with each composition.
Fred Hirsch is on Tuesday night at the Dalton Center Recital Hall at Western Michigan University. Come.
And we should mention, because last night was the Grammys, Fred was nominated for the third time for a Grammy. And sadly, for the third time, he lost. He was nominated in the Best Improvised Solo category for a solo on Free Flying. That's a song from his latest duo album with guitarist Julian Lage. But I believe the Grammy went to Wayne Shorter. So, you know, if you got to lose, you can lose to the best.
Fred Hirsch sounds like an amazing, amazing individual. Does he have the career and the life that he wants right now?
That's actually a really good question, because I think for quite a long time he was a well-kept secret in jazz to a certain degree. He was somebody that New Yorkers knew about, that pianists knew about, but didn't necessarily gain the popular traction. And so it's really interesting that in the past 5 or 6 years, his career has really taken on a national and international scope. Things have happened to him, certainly like Grammy nominations. He was named the Jazz Journalist Association Artist of the Year for any instrument a couple years ago. And he's just constantly touring and doing very interesting composing projects right now. So I think he's about at the pinnacle of what he could hope to do in terms of professionally. So I think he is very pleased.
Fantastic. And we're about halfway through the hour, so let's take another break for some music. And you described it a little earlier, but just cap it off again for us.
So this next piece is called Stuttering. This is from a trio album featuring not the trio that's going to be here on Tuesday night, but Drew Gress and the Sheet Weights. And I think you'll be able to hear why this is called Stuttering. It's a very complex piece. There's repeated notes in the right hand. And in the left hand, there's actually kind of what we call a hemiola figure, something that's in a different time signature than everything else. So there's almost two levels of stuttering. There's these repeated notes, and then there's this bass figure that comes in at exactly the wrong time each time. And so you'll hear it only lines up at the very end of the piece.
Wow, that's the Fred Hirsch Trio with Stuttering. And here in the studio with me, pianist Jeremy Siskin, professor of music at Western Michigan University. And he is encouraging you all to come out and hear Fred Hirsch.
Strongly encouraging, yes.
Strongly. Probably wouldn't be so bad for you either if people stuck around and came out to see you Wednesday night with your trio.
That's right. Just camp out at Dalton. Spend the night and show up again Wednesday.
If you have any affinity for improvisation and jazz and great musicianship and what can happen when friends reunite, that's a great reason to be there. So again, this is a first announcement so far this hour that you were playing on Wednesday night with your old friends Nancy Harms and Lucas Pino. So you've done two albums, one with this lineup, Finger Songwriter, and bringing them back together. Even though you moved to Kalamazoo a year ago, you're still keeping up ties.
Yeah, this group is very important to me, partially because I'm very passionate about the music, but also we specialize in doing in-home concerts. So we're very mobile, and we really love being able to bring music directly to people. So we've done about 60 in-home concerts in 15 different states in the last year and a half. And so what ends up happening is that the group is very tight, very comfortable with each other. We know our repertoire very well. It becomes this perpetual motion machine that gains more and more traction. So we've been fortunate to get some interesting bookings. We've played at Bucknell University in Lewiston, Pennsylvania. And in February, we're going out to Bethune-Cookman University in Daytona, Florida. And we're doing a lot of interesting house concerts in between.
House concerts. What's the setup for that?
So the instrumentation of this group is piano, voice, and one player playing clarinet, tenor saxophone, and bass clarinet. So generally, I require there to be a piano for any of my house concerts because this music is so piano-centric. A keyboard just really wouldn't, the group wouldn't be nearly as rich or interesting. We generally like to have between 20 and 30 people at the house concerts. We play for about an hour. It's pretty relaxed. Everybody gets a CD, and everything's on a donation basis. So people really enjoy it, and what's really valuable to us is that while we might have a host who is a music fanatic or a piano owner or a piano lover, they invite 20 to 30 of their friends who could come from any walk of life and might not really be exposed to music other than what's in the top 40 on the radio. So it's a great way for us to reach out and to bring the music to some new people and to serve a different audience.
Are you the primary songwriter for the trio?
Yes, I am. So I have a huge interest in words and literature. I have my master's degree in English comparative literature. And a lot of the lyrics are paraphrases of poetry or prose. And I guess I should mention at this point, I'm actually teaching a songwriting course for the first time ever at Western Michigan. And so that's a just really fun way to share my knowledge and, of course, to learn some new things about songwriting.
Does this relate to the project that came through last week with Frank Carlberg, where I know students are working on their own material, their own songs, and they're headed over to New York in spring?
That's right. Dr. Andrew Rathman and I wrote a grant for kind of a songwriting initiative. And that project is more based on art song and setting poetry. The class will deal with some art song as well as writing things in the style of the Great American Songbook and the singer-songwriter movement, you know, people like Joni Mitchell and Carole King and Billy Joel and James Taylor. So we're trying to kind of expose them to things that will be useful in all kinds of aspects of their life.
Is it ever too early to start writing songs for yourself?
To me, no. It's often scary. You know, putting words on paper is a lot more confessional, a lot more personal than just putting music on paper, which could mean anything. So it's difficult, I think, for younger people to do. But hey, 17-year-old Lord just won the Grammy for best song, I believe. So why not start now?
All right. Well, let's look at one of the songs from Finger Songwriter and get some of the music in our ears. Maybe starting with the track "What Is That Feeling?" And it's for Jack Kerouac, or it's an homage, would you say?
It's something of an homage, and it's something of a paraphrase of a part of his work. I was reading On the Road, the great Kerouac travel log, and he starts, and the book, if you haven't read it, is just one exciting adventure after another with this kind of hyper feeling of, you know, hope and drugs and the 60s and all these, you know, amazing things. And then it's at a certain point, he comes back and reflects that not only is each new day bringing a new adventure, but it's bringing a departure. It's bringing a you know, leaving his friends, whoever they've met at their latest stop. And so he takes a second and he reflects. And the passage begins, what is that feeling you feel? And I thought that was such a great piece of writing, because such a lesser writer would have said, I feel sad, I feel melancholy, it's bittersweet. But he says, you know, human emotions can't be pinpointed, and certainly not in simple language, but sometimes maybe not even in complex language. These emotions are complicated. They contain all kinds of flavors. And so he stops and he says, what is that feeling you feel? And so I wrote this song based off of that passage.
To curse and praise, the face receding on the plain. The specs in that instant, it's real. Switching off the headlights, you park the car and start. What is that feeling you feel? What is that feeling you feel? What is that feeling you
feel? Jeremy Siskind, Nancy Harms, and Lucas Pino. And Jeremy's here in the studio. That was a song called What Is That Feeling? And which you ably described right before we listened to it. Listeners, if you've just tuned in, Jeremy Siskind and his two friends here will be performing in the Dalton Center Recital Hall on Wednesday night at 7:30 with tickets available at the door. You can also check with the Miller Auditorium box office, 387-2300. Jeremy's made quite a name for himself already here in West Michigan. Lots of performing and lots of new projects. You've had, of course, a full schedule of teaching and writing grants and initiatives to help out the students. Are you still full of energy and on fire for your work?
Of course. it does get hard in January and February, but... The great thing about being at Western Michigan, especially in the jazz program, is that there's kind of a constant flow of guest artists coming in, and they always energize us. They always inspire the students. They always bring something new, a new idea, a new exercise, a new performance that we hadn't thought of before, or at least that we haven't thought of in a while. So it is always energizing to be here, and there's a lot of rejuvenation as new blood comes in. For example, right now we have our visiting guest artist Edward Simon here with us, and he's, as we speak, he's teaching lessons to our students in Dalton Center. He also braved the snow with me today, and we recently had Frank Carlberg, Christine Correa, and Jay Anderson here, and they gave a wonderful performance and worked with our students. So those kinds of things always keep me inspired.
How about the songwriting? Will there be any brand new songs on Wednesday's show?
Somewhat brand new. this project actually just went and recorded a new album that will hopefully be released in the summer with Lucas and Nancy, as well as some really amazing guest singers, including Grammy winner Kurt Elling, our visiting guest artist in the vocal jazz department, Peter Eldridge, and vocal great Kendra Schenk. So there's about three or four songs that are from that project. We'll also be doing some covers that you might not have heard, of songs by the Ink Spots, the doo-wop group from the 50s. I think we're doing Moonlight in Vermont, the great jazz standard, and something by one of my favorite songwriters who very few people have heard of, whose name is Adam Ilhan, A-D-E-M. So I'm... No matter how big of a Jeremy Siskind fan you are, there'll be something that you haven't heard.
Great. Tell me, I glossed over Nancy and Lucas a little bit,
sure.
I feel. Tell me some about her credits at Nancy Harms.
Absolutely. So they're both New York-based musicians. Nancy's story is very interesting. She's originally from Clara City, Minnesota, a town of 1,200 people. And she didn't really study jazz until kind of relatively late in her career. I mean, she's still in an early part of her career, I trust, but late of her career so far. And so Nancy started singing with a great mentor named Arnie Fogel, who is the world's leading expert on Bing Crosby. And she just kind of started singing jazz, became popular in Minneapolis, recorded her first CD, which was named in the top 10 of the year in the Minneapolis Tribune, and moved to New York. While in New York, trombonist Wycliffe Gordon, one of the great trombonists of our era, worked with Lincoln Center Orchestra for a long time. He saw her singing in a jam session and said, "You need to come on tour with me." They've done a recording together, and Wycliffe plays on her latest recording, which is called Dreams in Apartments, which I think peaked at number 12 on the jazz radio charts. So she's an exciting up-and-coming star and just an incredible vocalist and incredible presence on stage.
And Lucas.
Lucas Pino is originally from the Phoenix area of Arizona. He kind of got an amazing start to his career when he was asked to be the saxophonist at the Brubeck Institute, which is a very selective school at the University of the Pacific, which chooses only one person per instrument every 2 years. And they get to work with Dave Brubeck when he was alive, as well as other guest artists. He then moved to New York, finished his education at the New School, got a master's at the Juilliard School, and now he leads a nonet that's very active in New York. They have a regular gig at Small's Jazz Club, and they just recorded a CD that I've heard. It sounds incredible. It's some of the best young players in New York, and hopefully that'll be available in the summer as well.
Any final thoughts?
No, it's just such a privilege to be part of a community that embraces the piano so much here in Kalamazoo with, of course, the Gilmore. We actually had an event on Sunday called Piano Day where we invited students in and had our piano faculty, Sylvia Roeder and Lori Sims, work with the students. We had our visiting artist Ed Simon here and then Fred Hirsch and my trio. So it's just kind of a thrill to be here with so much love for the piano.
Great. Well, Jeremy, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you so much, Kara.
Let's go out with one of your songs from Fingersongwriter. It's called Obad, which to me, I think of Ravel. Maybe you can help me with another definition.
So Obad is a song sung to celebrate the coming of the morning. It's the title of a great Philip Larkin poem that's kind of a reflection on death. So I'll leave you with that cheery thought.